Hello, I'm Dan.
I'm Simon.
And this is the Wikicast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Simon, what are we talking about this week?
Well, you know what, Dan? You know what we're not talking about? We're not talking about either of the two articles that we talked about last week. And why is that?
Because GarageBand decided to just absolutely have a bit of a fucking shutdown on me last week, and I was absolutely furious because we lost about an hour's audio the first time and then 20 minutes the second time when we tried to record. So
we had two really solid episodes. We had two really interesting articles, particularly the first one. It was about a county in somewhere in the east coast of America, and it was like it had an obscene number of statistics, and so we were drilling in, had a great chat, and then it just died. And we were going to be like, yeah, we're finally back on weekly schedule, we're finally going to go back to doing this podcast properly, and then fate snatched it away. Hopefully, if you're hearing this, we're assuming that we're not going to have any technical problems this time.
Fingers crossed.
So we're not talking about either of the two articles we had last week. This time, we are talking about data tech. Data Tech Limited, also known as Data Tech Group, is a Johannesburg, South Africa-based multinational information and communications technology, brackets ICT, solutions and services group. It's a really boring looking company, I'll be honest. Why couldn't we have had one of the articles from last week?
Last week's one was amazing.
I mean, this is a South African company. It's listed on the Johannesburg and London stock exchanges. Operates in more than 70 countries across six continents.
What's their stock currently doing?
The revenue is down this year, but it doesn't say anything about the stock on the wiki. The revenue this year, as in 2017, is $6.08 billion. So they're quite big. The group's main divisions are Westcon International, DBA Westcon Comstore, a technology distributor, Logicalis, an IT solutions and managed service providers, and the company's Datatech Financial Services and Analysis Mason, which provide financing, telecommunications, media and technology, and consulting services. It is the most boring company I think I've ever heard of in my entire life.
I mean, I'm pinching myself just to stay awake here, but yeah.
It's the definition of when you're a kid and you think that's what an adult does. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I work for data tech. Like, literally, the most generic name. If this is, this ties into the whole are we living in a simulation thing. This is literally proof, if you wanted to take it that way, that we are living in a simulation, because that is the most unimaginatively named data company.
It's an annoying name, though, because data tech has all the kind of promise of having a name being, oh yeah, I work for data tech. It's something so simple that you would think, oh, maybe it is kind of cool. Like, but it's just absolutely, you know, boring as sin.
The only picture on this Wikipedia article, and in fact, the only colour on this Wikipedia article, is a picture of their logo and then the revenue being up or down, red and green, respectively.
Jesus.
Everything else is black and white. Literally, this is one of the most boring, like, decent length Wikipedia pages, because we've had short ones before. Like, last week, we had one that was one sentence long, but we spun into a web of interestingness, hopefully. Well, not that you know. But this one is a moderate length, and it's just dull as sin. Like, it was founded in 1986 by Jens Montanana, who became the company's first CEO.
Wow.
As in,
so his name sounds quite exciting.
His name is Banana, but replace the B with M-O-N-T. So, Montanana. And literally, oh my God, I am falling asleep just reading this. My goodness. If you work for Data Tech and you're a reader of the podcast, do let us know. And tell us how you avoid killing yourself every day by the sheer dullness of your existence. Because goodness.
What do they do again?
I don't know. The main divisions are IT solutions, technology distributors, financing, telecommunications, media and technology. These are just buzzwords. I swear this is a company that is just like, it's a consultancy company that is only deals in buzzwords. It's like, oh yeah, we're really trying to improve the synergy and the communication. It's like, what does that mean? Like, I mean, what? They have an internet service provider, I think. Wow. Oh, no, they sold that in 2000. Never mind. That was actually vaguely interesting. They're on the London Stock Exchange under alternative investment, which is the most interesting thing on this whole thing yet.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. Within the company's subsection, Westcon is described as a value-added distributor of security, collaboration, networking, and data center solutions.
Right.
Well, I mean, what are the rules? What does it mean?
You've explained it very well. They do just sound dull. I mean,
good God.
Come
on, Data Tech. This is meant to be a fun, lighthearted podcast. And you are making our lives very difficult. So far, the only thing that we've found funny is the fact that your CEO surname is hilarious. Montananar.
Also, you know it's not especially interesting Wikipedia article when the first question I asked you was, how are their stocks doing? Are they up for the quarter?
Literally, there are 14 references on this. And every single one, bar three, just is Data Tech forms standalone IT consultancy. Data Tech forms Mason Advisory. Data Tech buys company for £12 million. Even the references are dull. You know what might be more interesting is if I just read the terms and conditions at the bottom of the Wikipedia article.
Why not?
This page. It was last edited 3 days ago, 10th of October, at 8:51.
Jeez.
So, assuming that that person was in South Africa, some late night editing. A text is available under the Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike license. Additional terms may apply. By using this site, you agree to the terms of use and privacy policy. Wikipedia is a registered trademark of the Wikimedia Foundation, Inc., a non-profit organization. See, that was arguably more interesting than anything else in this article, because at least we could talk about Wikipedia.
Exactly. I don't think there was nothing arguable about that claim. It was just more interesting.
Do you ever think about, have you ever donated to Wikipedia? Because they'll often do, drives. I really should.
I've found ones where I've really wanted to, and I thought, ooh, and then just not got around to doing it.
But how many times per week do you think you use Wikipedia?
Far too much for me not to be giving something.
That's the thing, right? Everybody uses it all the time, and yet so few people donate. I mean, I only have maybe twice. And considering we
literally... How much have you donated each time?
I think it's been a fiver each time, which, is what they say. I think it's if they say if everybody donates... everybody on the site at that instant donates £3... then they'd be sorted for 10 years or something. Mm. So I'm I'm donating a bit more than you're asking for, but yeah. I'm also not doing it as frequently as you're asking. I feel like maybe that's actually something we should do when we get a Patreon sorted for the Wikicast. Maybe we should have a certain buffer is donated to Wikipedia every month.
That's a good idea. I really like that idea.
Because for one thing, it's the whole reason that this podcast exists, and it's arguably the reason that both of us are in education still and not out on the cold hard streets.
True. Because
without the information on Wikipedia, we would both be screwed.
Yeah, no, for sure. The number of times I've just used it for not necessarily, well, for someone who studies an essay writing subject, finding kind of things to cite and source, and often I'm using JSTOR
right
as my kind of hub for journals and things, but the easiest way to find something good is to find the Wikipedia article on that primary topic, give it a skim, and find the most controversial kind of point raised, then see there's references for it, and then it gives you a link to that JSTOR site, and then it's a considerably easier way of finding something cool.
It's also great, not Wikipedia, but Wikimedia is amazing for people like me who need copyright free images. Because
I don't think I've ever been on Wikimedia.
Well, you have.
I didn't even know. I didn't even hear what. I've never even heard of Wikimedia.
Well, it's basically what the images on Wikipedia are stored. But there's also a broader range of that. In fact, at the bottom of every Wikipedia page, there is a link to Wikimedia. There's a Wikimedia project which looks like the Tau logo from Warhammer 40,000. It's just full. You can just search for man wearing hat or something. Actually, tell you what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to search Wikipedia for man, because let's face it, it's more fucking interesting than this article. Search Wikimedia Foundation man wearing hat. How many results am I going to get? Okay, none. because I was looking for the wrong thing, apparently. I don't understand enough about Wikimedia. Oh, I thought I did. Okay. I thought that that was where you search for pictures. It's a thing on Wikipedia where you can, you know, that they will host pictures and they will have certain accreditations or, you know, usage or whatever. And for Crash Course, for example, we're very careful with what we use and what we don't, because we don't want to get sued or anything. Oh, Wikimedia Commons. That's what I mean. And you know, it's just super, super useful. And yeah, I reckon we should do that. What is the latest on us doing a Patreon, by the way? Maybe people listening to this care and have stopped, you know, that they aren't asleep by us talking about the dullest company in existence.
I think we're pretty much ready. I mean, I say that because I was reviewing my bank the other day and the payment for like £10.50 for our month of hosting came through, and I'm like, oh, I'd really like it if we could even just knock a little bit off that. That'd be really nice.
That's the thing. At the end of the day, what we want is for a Patreon for this project to pay for the hosting, which is how much did you say it was per month?
I think about £10.50.
Okay. So it's not much. So if everybody who downloaded the Wikicast regularly gave £1 a month, we'd be minted, actually. We'd be...
The things we could do, I'd actually be able to invest in a recording setup that isn't jank.
Every time, readers, every single episode, something different goes wrong.
It's just so frustrating. I mean, and it's obviously frustrating for the listeners because they don't get a podcast, but it's even more frustrating for us because the situation we had last week where it was brilliant, like it was going so well and we had such an interesting, we had a properly interesting thing to talk about and we tied it into all these things, and I couldn't believe it. I got an error up on my MacBook Pro saying GarageBand quit unexpectedly, and I'm like, okay. And then I went into my most recent and then I saw the file there saying that it had kind of saved, and then I opened it and then it just disappeared and said could not open file because this file doesn't exist. And I'm like, well,
it doesn't exist in the records.
It's not helpful.
It's the Camino of files.
Yeah,
it might sound like we're being whiny bitches about this, but it's our podcast. We'll do whatever the fuck we want, and we're gonna whine about this because we were really annoyed.
There's a concern on our parts because we don't want to let you down. But equally, the reason we do this podcast and the reason we did it in the first place is because it was a passion project for you and I.
Yeah.
It was you and me. And it's just, you know, it's so frustrating when, you know, I certainly when, you know, Simon's getting to the absolute business end of his PhD, I'm doing everything under the sun. So our time is just, you know, we have nothing. So when we schedule these times to meet every week, it's disappointing that we can't get the podcast out because something goes wrong. But then it's also disappointing because we don't really ever see each other anymore.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like the one time in the week where we actually get to chat. And it's really annoying when that one time where we get to, you know, chat like we used to because, you know, you're not in the house anymore, is then tainted by this feeling of just annoyance and frustration.
Because we're not being productive at the same time as having fun. And that is the goal. We want to be having a good time, but also getting something out of it at the end.
No, exactly.
So,
and we look forward to hearing correspondence and things, and that's a week without correspondence. Well, it's not because people email in regardless, but it's, you know, we get considerably less because there isn't something interesting to talk about or something uninteresting to talk about.
I did see, incidentally, I think you saw this on Twitter as well, that there was a poll done in the the Wikicast Facebook fan group about who would win one Dan-sized Dan or one cat-sized cat. And I think the cat would win, I believe. So
a Dan-sized Dan, so a me-sized me or a normal cat.
Yeah,
right.
The cat would be all over.
And they said I'd win.
Let me have a look. I'm just trying to get this tweet up. This is from Griffin, who's a reader from Jersey. One cat-sized cat got 33 votes, as opposed to one Dan-sized Dan who got 5.
Really?
Yeah, you are weaker than
I'd kick the shit out of that cat. I'm not hiding anything here.
I don't know.
I hate cats. I hate them. I do not see the point. You know, kittens are cute. I'm not so kind of just dead inside, not as to not recognize that. But equally, if a cat's wanting to have a go at me, I don't give a shit whether it's a kitten or some old, you know, I'll f-ing kick the bastard.
It depends what the criteria for win, quote unquote, is. Like, is first blood winning, in which case the cat would definitely win, or is it fight to the death?
Fight to the death.
I feel like fight to the death, the cat would struggle to kill you. You could throttle a cat.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. I was hoping it would be more obvious, like there's no way this cat could kill me, but apparently the cat's going to struggle. Cheers.
Hang on, I've just realized...
To be fair, cats normally win when they're fighting sparrows, so...
Yes, we do have some... I did have a sneak peek at one of the correspondents from Alex Lathbridge, Thermodynamics, or Rapstract, who's given us some very interesting Patroni. I just realized this has become a parody of itself by this point. It's like, oh, boring Wikipedia article complaining about something. Oh, dogs and cats. Dan Small. Yeah. It's like the most...
Such a formula.
Let's just take a step back and look at the meta on this. So I do want to take a step back because we won't finish with the Patreon discussion. Because I think in the next couple of weeks, we'll look to put that in place. And we'd only accept contributions for the moment that are like £1 or $1, whatever it is per person. I think it would be good beyond our first goal should be covering the cost of the hosting. I like the fact, incidentally, that we're including the readers in this because I think it is important. It's a family issue, and I think it's important that the kids are involved. Covering the cost of the hosting. Then I think on top of that, say $10 per month donation to Wikipedia.
Mm.
And then maybe past that, a stretch goal would be any money that's in addition to that $10 or however much we choose and the hosting cost, then goes into a fund that allows us to travel to see each other and film
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking about. It would be so handy if we can have a designated account for when we do, you know, if at some point the podcast blows up, because from an analytics perspective we are doing better and better each week. We are increasing the kind of the listenership, and that's super exciting. But if we reached a point where there was enough money on the side of, you know, aside of that, you know, a monthly donation or, you know, or a small weekly donation that would kind of incentivize the weekliness of the podcast to Wikipedia, to have some money go into a fund which would allow Simon and I to, you know, if we want to plan some stuff for Spongy and Electric over Christmas, which I know we do, finding the time for either you to come down and or me to go up, and we, you know, we can put that into... You know, paying for a train ticket or just allowing us to get there and actually kind of sort it.
Yeah,
but it depends. But I think that, you know, I've spoken to people who I know personally, and they've said they would not, you know, they'd be perfectly happy in giving us £1 a month, and that would make such a difference just from a hosting perspective to know that it's self-sufficient. That would be really important. Anything we do beyond that, you know, the sky's the limit. We would obviously need some money to. We've spoken about merch before. We'd really be really keen to do that. And you know, again, we've spoken to folks and we've had emails in, and they, you know, people said they'd be keen for it. Obviously, to do that, we would need to send off for designs, and that would, you know, for us to get samples, that requires postage and some kind of fee.
We need capital. I'm going to rub my fingers close to the microphone. Hang on. I don't know if that's even audible.
Hang on. Let me try.
We need money. Okay. The fingers mean the taxes. That's a Simpsons reference for you.
And ultimately, the reason we'd be doing this is because we feel for ourselves as you know, creators, it will enhance the final product for you, and we can give you as listeners more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Clark as well, if you'd be interested in
I think
it's something we'll look into.
I think what we need from you guys, from the readers at home, what we could definitely do with is suggestions for what you would like to see in Patreon perks. Because I think it's all well and good us having, to begin with, a $1 per month contribution, and that's all we'll accept, because this frankly isn't worth anything more than that. But if there were to be perks, like, for example, maybe a live stream with us once a month or something like that, or whatever you think would be a good idea for a perk that might be worth something like $5 a month, we want to hear from you, because we're basically two guys that started a podcast pissing around in our front room, and now for some reason there are nearly like there are 1,000-2,000 people listening to every episode. So we're a little bit clueless on this, so whatever you think would be best, please email in spongyelectric@gmail.com, and we'd really like to hear from you, and also just what you think about the Patreon in general. If you think we're just being cash grabbing bastards, then you know, speak your mind, but we think it's important. But I don't think we should occupy any more of the podcast with this, because this is serious grown-up chat, and this is not what this podcast is about. I actually have an idea I want to discuss with you.
Okay.
Now, that idea is, are you familiar with the game Hide and Seek?
Yes, I am familiar with the game Hide and Seek, Simon.
Right. Now, there's a variant on Hide and Seek where you blindfold the person who is seeking, and everybody who is hiding has to find a place, and then they stay there, and they're not allowed to move. And right. So the person who is finding, there's no rush, they can take their time, but they're basically groping around and feeling. And what you can also do is put like a GoPro on their head, and like you can record, you can watch their perspective back afterwards, or they can watch it back, so they can see how close they were to people. I think actually maybe, I think the variant is you can also move around, but you have to, obviously have to be quiet, otherwise the person's just going to get you. Now, what I wondered was, you know, Google, do a thing called Google Cardboard, where it's like, it's basically like an ultra cheap VR set of goggles that you put on your eyes, and your phone slits in a slot, and it provides like a basic 3D kind of view. Are you familiar with this vaguely?
Right.
Right.
I think so, yeah.
What I'm suggesting is, you buy, because they're like £5 or something. It's basically just cardboard. It's super cheap. You buy however many sets of Google Cardboard, one for each person who's playing hide and seek. Say 10 people. Then what you do is you do a hangout where the person who is seeking puts their phone on the front of their cardboard, so they can't see anything. They're blind, but you take their perspective and you put it into the eyes of everybody else who is playing the game. So everybody is blindfolded, but everybody apart from the seeker can see what the seeker is seeing. And you're allowed to move. The idea being that if you see that the seeker has entered your room, you then have to try and run away, but you can only see their perspective of you.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
It's like you move and then you just see some idiot fall over. I think this would be hilarious. Maybe this is a stretch goal for the Patreon. I want to do this with like members of the chapel choir or something. I think it'd be hilarious. That'd be amazing.
That's a good idea.
It's a bit like sardines.
It's got legs.
Okay, well, we'll have to try and find a way to make this work. That is a video for my channel, I think, because I was thinking about this today. I was watching one of my favourite YouTubers, Tom Scar, or Tomb Scare, as he is on Twitter, because it's Halloween. And he did the version with the GoPro, and I was like, I just wonder if you were to do the VR version, if it would work. So if you like the sound of that, also email in, because I'd really like to try doing that, and I just need one person. It's like the whole one like on I'll do this, and then you like it yourself, and you're like, say no more. I just want that, but from somebody else to validate. Other than Dan, who has to say what, you know, he just has to agree with me, otherwise he comes across like a twat in the podcast.
Exactly. And God forbid I come across as a twat.
I'd hate it like anything else. So more than anything else, even. God, I really can't talk today. I am so mentally fried.
How's the PhD going?
Well, it's frustrating at the moment, because I've written everything apart from the penultimate chapter. So basically the way that the structure of the thesis is, there's the introduction, which is now written, and that introduces an event called a sudden stratospheric warming. And there's one event that I focused on, because there are like maybe 20 in the literature that like we have in records since 1979. What I've said in the introduction is, let's look at one event and examine what happened. Chapter 2 then goes into the background of all the physics you need to know in order to read the rest of this thesis, and specifically to understand events like that one. And then you put that on the back burner. Chapter 3 is the theory, which we've developed, and I've derived two new relations that, if you must know, are a quasi-geostrophic relation for mass flux into the polar region. And the idea being that that's accounting for observed changes in polar pressure. That's like done and dusted, gone from my supervisors, that's all good. Then you go to the first results chapter, which is applying those theories to data, and you compare their predictions to output. So the output of those predictions to observations. That's been written. I'm waiting for my supervisors to get back to me. And I've been waiting for a while because one of them is in Japan and the other one is a very busy person and just hasn't replied to my email. So I'm a little bit frustrated because I want to get on, but I don't want to move ahead until... Because the next chapter is basically like that chapter, but looking at a subset. So it's only looking at events like the one that's introduced in chapter one. Rather than the whole data set, which is like 55,000 data points, it's going to be looking at like 2,000, and they're kind of special. But I'm going to be using the same techniques that I did in the previous chapter. So I want to make sure that those techniques are 100% like rock solid, that they're good statistics and everything like that before I kind of repeat myself. I'm a little bit frustrated because I can't move ahead. Like, I kind of have just said fuck it and started writing the next chapter anyway, but I don't want to get too invested in it until I get their feedback, because I feel like effectively it's not as simple as just comparing like predicted temperatures for example to observed temperatures. I'm comparing a predictive version of a field that you already have to do some calculations on from satellite data, and the way that you reconstruct it isn't perfect anyway, and I feel like the whole thing is based on a column of sand, and I just I need that reassurance from my supervisors that I'm not just, you know, like the physics version of a quack and trying to push some terrible product before I carry on. So that's basically my situation. I'm almost like the last chapter's half written, the conclusion will take a day to write. I'm very close to finishing if there's no problems with what I've done so far. If there are problems, it's going to be another week or two on top of that. So it's getting there. I feel like a ship that's been demasted and is limping into port and limping into its final destination, because the wind has gone from my sails because I've been on hardcore Henry mode for the past how many weeks it's been in a row without taking any breaks. Like, until last weekend when I just broke and I was like, I'm taking the weekend off. So I'm exhausted. And I just want to be done by this point, but I'm not quite done yet. And I think if people reply to my emails a bit faster, I might have already been done, but I'm not going to bitch about it because I've already done enough bitching on this podcast. How is your life at the moment with everything that you're doing?
Oh, it's pretty busy. It hasn't helped that in university tradition, freshers flu hit me like just a fucking train. I do fortunately next Tuesday, I think, I'm popping into work for my free flu jab. Because all employees, if they want, they can have a flu jab, which is really, really helpful. That work's going really well. I start my technical training tomorrow, which is when I basically sit in front of a computer for a week and take lots of exams to see where my level is at and then how much training I need. So I'm actually kind of hoping that I think really I'm going to sit most of these tests and pretty much be okay. And I don't think I actually need a tremendous amount of training yet, because a lot of my focus in this first stage before working my way up to, CEO. Expert or genius, it's kind of fixing software issues,
right,
or identifying software issues, which I basically do anyway if it's quiet downstairs. So the way the shop works is that you buy most of your products downstairs and then you go upstairs if you need any technical support. And in going up there, if it's not too busy down where I'm working on the floor, then if someone goes in and goes, my iPad's not working, and I'll go, well, let's have a look.
Well,
and
I can usually sucks sort to be it you. In like,
yeah, like 2 minutes. So it's really fun though. I'm really liking it. And GNS, the Gilbert and Sullivan Society, is going really well. It's really exciting. I actually have to disappear off this evening for 2 hours to teach some of that, which is going to be fun. Ex-University Singers is going from strength to strength. We've got a really strong choir. We're making an amazing sound. We have the weekend away to Waycroft, which is kind of like a weekend retreat for the choir to learn music and bond and get to know each other. It's really good. And that's about kind of, that's two or three, in, oh yeah, 3 days before Evensong, which is when we're singing Evensong at the cathedral, Exeter Cathedral.
Are we filming it? Yeah.
Are you going to nip up to the organ loft then, do you think?
Well, the whole it's going to be a palaver trying to film this, because if, dear readers, you have to remember that when I filmed stuff for the choir before, it's just that, it's the choir. At a push, maybe there's an organist. So you basically, I had two microphones, you put them in front of the choir, you have three cameras at most, and so you have like a wide shot of the choir, you have a close-up, and then you might have an alternative close-up that's locked off. With this event, there is a choir, there's two choirs as a matter of fact, combined.
Oh wait, you're talking about Symphonic Evensong?
Yeah, wasn't that what you were saying this coming Sunday?
No, so we have after Waycroft we have Singers Evensong.
Oh,
which is the one where X University sing and I'm conducting.
Oh, with the Trinity Te Deum.
I thought you meant you were going to record that, and I was like, oh, I didn't know. That'd be really cool.
Oh, no, God.
Because we're doing the Trinity Te Deum.
Which is Dan's favourite piece of music in the entire world.
And it's super cool and really loud and amazing. So I was going to say, if you're free for even a bit, because Dr. Jones will be in the organ loft, so like stick a camera up there. It'd be pretty cool to get some footage of singers.
Okay, well, I'll see what I could do with that. So yeah, what I was talking about before was the chapel choir of this Sunday. In fact, if you're in Exeter and listen to this on Saturday or Sunday, come along to the cathedral for Evensong on Sunday.
It's going to be amazing.
Because it's the cathedral choir and chapel choir combined, so two choirs. You've got the organ and an orchestra.
Yeah, Exeter Symphony Orchestra.
Yep. And you're doing, is it Brew? No, not Brew in D. What are you doing?
Dyson in D, which has been orchestrated by the fantastic David Davis. Mm-hmm. We're doing Give Unto the Lord by Edward Elgar as the anthem. We're doing a really cheesy psalm by Rutter. It's his setting of The Lord is My Shepherd.
Nice.
And I can't remember the responses.
But basically, I've now got to try and work out how to mic and camera this thing. I bought another set of microphones. We now have two sets of Rode M5s at our disposal. Somebody actually asked me about that on Twitter, about, I think it was Alex from the Paper Trail podcast, which I've appeared on and is quite fun, which just talks to people about their favorite books. Give them a search, Paper Trail, if you like the sound of that. About what we use, just as a side note, I use a Rode NT1A going into a Zoom H4n. And what do you use, Dan?
I use a Rode USB
going into a janky MacBook.
In my laptop's defense, my notebook's defense, it's served me well. I got it at the beginning of 2013, and it's been an absolute dream. I've only noticed in the past kind of 6 months it's starting to get quite sluggish, and the hard drive's pretty much at capacity, and there's an awful lot of stuff on it. You know, it's got like four different cloud storages synced up to it, and God knows how much other kind of rubbish I've got on here. So I think at some point I might be in need for an upgrade. So
I love the idea that it's like an old dog. It's like Candy's dog in Of Mice and Men. You're just gonna have to take the MacBook out back and shoot it eventually.
Yeah. He's been good.
But so we've got two sets of microphones to record it, which means I need to find two ways of getting the audio like recorded, which means using the H4n and using the Scarlatti red box which Michael has, and then I've got to work out how the fuck I'm putting cameras, because I ideally want to put one on Michael, who's conducting, one in the organ loft, like two on the choir, two on the orchestra. I put this on Twitter, and it was a tweet that seemed to strike a chord, because I think there's this rule, which I've called Clark's Law of Cameras, that whenever you have N cameras, you think that you can do the job perfectly if you had N plus one. So like, with choir, to be fair, with three, I'm actually very happy, but with four, it would be better. So, oh God, it's going to be this is ultimately the stuff that I really like doing, though. It's why I want to do media stuff full time.
It's going to be so exciting.
We've got that to look forward to. Why do we do this to ourselves, Dan? Why?
I don't know.
Why do we make our lives so... Why do we do this podcast? It's so much more work. Well, to be fair, it's more work for me because I'm the one that edits it.
Yeah, no, this is true. I was having a chat walking to the chapel for rehearsal with Ed, and I was just like, why do we do so much music? I've got enough to do. And I didn't, you know, up until this year, I hadn't had a job to contend with too, and it's just like, oh my God, it's crazy.
Yeah, this is like my...
I like it because it means that every day, there isn't a day in the week where I'm not pushing myself to like 110% productivity, because I literally have to fit all the hours in.
Yeah.
And then my weekends are spent doing actual academic work and maybe having an early night, and then that's it. And then I hit Monday to Friday, it's just crazy busy.
Yeah. But
I like feeling productive and having, you know, doing stuff and getting all done.
I'm at the point where I've done that for so long that I'm just basically burned out. So I'm just trying to be nice to myself. Although something I've done this week, every day since Sunday, I've gone for a run, and that's been giving me a nice structure to the day. Like, I know that I'm doing that every day, and especially when so much of my work is fits and bursts, depending on, I'll do a huge amount of work and then wait for supervisors to get back to me. I think it's really important to have that constant. But otherwise, I am just so much less productive than I was a few weeks ago, when I was like getting at 9, leave at 9 or 10 p.m. I can't do it anymore. I'm too tired. I need a very long... What's the quote? I'm going on holiday, a very long holiday.
I need a holiday, a long holiday, and I don't plan to return or something.
No, it's one from which I do not think I'll return. In fact, I mean not to.
Yeah, there you go.
That's Bilbo from Fellowship of the Ring, for those of you who were just very confused then. Yeah, I'm amazing. At the point where I just need to be careful and just get the work done, and then I can crash and sleep for a very, very, very long time. And play XCOM and read. I've been doing a lot of reading. Are you planning on reading the new John Green novel?
Yeah, definitely. When I've got most of my academic reading out of the way. Problem is with doing a degree in English and classics is there's a ton of reading. Just like, there's just so much.
Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
But I'm very keen to. I've enjoyed, I've enjoyed the vast majority of his books. So
I mean, I'm 3 chapters in. I only read for like 10 minutes the other day. And it's good. It feels like I guess so far it feels closest to An Abundance of Catherines, which I think is quite an underrated book, actually. But it reads well, although he has done the classic John Green. John, if you ever listen to this, which you might, because don't mean to brag, I do have your number. But if you do end up listening to this, I do think a common thing he does in his writing is he makes people who are 15 or 16 have the intellectual and emotional complexity of a 35 to 40 year old author. And like, I think it's great that he doesn't patronize kids, because I think that's a very common thing that authors do. They're like, kids are just idiots. Well, to be fair, kids are idiots. But I think he gives people internal monologues and philosophical and intellectual complexities that 99.99999% of 14-year-olds or 15 or 16-year-olds don't have.
I think it's a bit of a caveat, though, isn't it? Because he's writing for he's writing for that demographic, which wouldn't be as aware of that kind of, or you know, that meta way of thinking. Because I doubt they'd read it and then go, "This is too adulty for me," because you're as adulty as you are.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's, you know, there's a fine line between not wanting to, as you say, patronize, but equally, I feel like you. Yeah, I don't know. I've never found his style and the way that he writes for the characters he writes too jarring, as far as their for their like kind of level of intellectual thought and stuff.
I don't know. I just
it's a fine line.
It's a minor complaint, to be honest. Like I like. Oh, and the other thing he's done so far in this is like checked off every possible social cause that you could be associated with that is definitely the right causes to be associated with. But I suppose if I was the kind of person who'd use the word cuck, I would say that it was like a slight case of virtue signaling, where it's like, I think so far in 3 chapters, we've already had mention of the fact that the prison system's underfunded, schools are underfunded, teachers are underappreciated, about wealth inequality in America and climate change. And it's like, it was like a lot to be crammed into 24 pages, however far I've got so far. Again, that's a very minor point. I don't find that too jarring, because they are good causes to be involved with, and I don't think it disrupts the plot. I'm looking forward to finishing it. Actually, it reads very well so far. I mean, the praise, I don't know if you've seen any of the criticism, has been very, very positive, like saying it's a modern classic.
No, oh, brilliant.
So yeah, that's been good.
No, as I say, I haven't really read much of it yet. So
I read a biography of Isaac Newton by James Gleick, which was great.
Nice.
And I read The Flight of the Eisenstein, which is the fourth book in the Horus Heresy series of a 30K novel.
Nice.
And I also bought a book. Well, I bought a few books. Hang on. I've moved away from the microphone. Sorry. I'm reaching for a pile of books. I went to Cambridge to visit Pixel Girl, where she's doing her PGC and loving life. And we'll be listening to this probably, so I can't be I can't say anything too bad. But I bought several books, including, and I'm not joking, Memes in Digital Culture by Limor Schiffman. And it is in the MIT...
I've heard of this book.
It's in the MIT Press Essential Knowledge series. And it's like a theoretical discussion of memes. And... how amazing. How on earth could I see this in the store and not buy it, you know? I was like, oh, well.
How can anyone of our generation not buy it?
Yeah, although it is kind of jarring to look through, and the fact that there are obviously like pictures demonstrating image macros and stuff and memes, and some of them are just, they're so dated. Like, do you remember Rage Comics?
Maybe.
They're like the stick figures that were like,
like, of course, yeah.
And
yeah,
you look at it in this and you think, oh my god, that's like five, that must have peaked 5 to 7 years ago or something like that, but it feels like an age in internet terms, in memeology. Yeah.
Well, the internet culture moves so quickly, doesn't it? It moves at the rate at which it grows incredibly fast.
I mean, is it just me, or does it seem that internet culture is evolving faster and faster?
Yeah, I think internet culture's kind of rate of evolution is almost, you know, you can almost chart an exact correlation between the rate at which technology itself is expanding and growing.
Yeah, it's like a Moore's law.
It's like exponential, isn't it? You know, the stuff that certainly, you know, I've been spending, again, to bring it back to work, but like I was having a discussion today on my break with one of the other employees about the iPhone 10. And just in the space of 10 years from the anniversary of the first iPhone in 2007 to where we are with the 10 now, it's unbelievable. And then you go 10 years back from there, 10 years back from, you know, to go back to 97, you know, that was when I was born, for one thing, but also just, you know, the technology is insane. It's such an incredible time. You almost can't believe that it can grow exponentially, because it's just incredible.
I mean, I remember, like, I think we talked about this a bit before, actually, when we were talking about our first games, but I remember, like, our first computer being Windows 95, and it had like 125 megabytes of RAM, and it was like just. And also, like, well, I remember when my dad, with his work, he came home with like a palm top, like organizer, like a digital organizer, and you could play like solitaire in it. And as a kid, who was like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or something, that was like the peak of technology. I was like, oh my god, my dad's like an international man of mystery, which he kind of is, to be fair. But like, he's got this like,
it's
highly
like
involved.
Used to have
technology.
The calculator watches.
Oh my god, yeah,
remember those? Yeah.
Oh, they were cool. I should get one of those.
The Casio kind of, oh man, the coolest things.
So I'm actually looking at, I don't know if you've ever seen any of these, but there's meme calendars.
As in what, like just literally every day of the month of the calendar is a different meme? Or?
As in, for each month of the year, so I'm looking at the one for 2017, this is incomplete, obviously, but for each month of the year, there are the memes that were really big in that year, in that month. Mm. So like for January, and this is the amazing thing, some of these feel so much older than they were. For January, do you remember the guy sprinkling the salt down his forearm?
Oh, Salt Bae.
Yeah, Salt Bae, that guy. The guy tapping his forehead and Cash Me Outside, How About Da? They were all January.
Jesus.
And then like February was Winnie the Pooh, which kind of escaped me. The guy blinking, I think it might even be Freddie Flintoff. It looks like him. You know the guy where it's like, oh, excuse me? Like, it was when we had that reading in Evensong the other day about King Solomon cutting the kid in half to give to the two mothers? And it's like, the real mother's just like, I'm sorry, what? Like, and then March, you've got like Meryl Streep yelling. There are definitely some of these months that are quite fallow, like Meryl Streep yelling and, oh, baby, what you doing? Was another one. April was the clown in the sewer, being like, hey kid, I've got prequel memes down here, and then like the kid kind of climbing in.
Have you seen It yet?
No, they're showing it at the campus cinema on Halloween.
I think we're in Bath.
Are you on Halloween?
Yeah, for Chapel Choir tour.
I might come with you for that. I don't know. It depends. If I'm finished, I'll definitely come with you. It depends like where I'm at with the thesis. But yeah, I don't know. No particular desire to see it, to be honest. Yeah. Not fast.
I really, really like horror. So I saw there's a deal. We've got, because with the PlayStation, it's just housemate Ed has just refreshed his PS Plus subscription.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which means you can get quite a few games just completely for free. And they've got a deal on the entire Amnesia collection.
Free. Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, you've so got to do that. It's the one game that's just... Oh, it's terrifying. It's just terrified me.
But going beyond that, I think arguably the headline meme of the year so far, apart from possibly Salt Bae, has been the SpongeBob... I'm trying to think of an example here, being like, you can't do sermons that are 20 minutes long. You can't do sermons that are 20 minutes long.
Yeah, nice.
That was May, apparently. That along with fidget spinners. That was when the fidget spinner crisis or craze, whatever you want to call it, peaked.
The fidget spinner plague.
This is how fast memes are evolving. I swear that it wasn't this fast evolving when we were younger. Like in school,
no.
It would change every year, a couple of years. Like rage comics were a thing for a long time.
Yeah,
whereas I think whereas you know, like,
even at this late stage, internet culture is still kind of it's trying to figure out what it is.
The way that you said late stage, it implies it's like late antiquity when you're like talking about the Roman Empire or like the late classical period of internetology.
Yeah.
This is a fine it's example kind of a meme
really
dating from the late
that.
Antiquity.
It's interesting you say that because let's say one of my modules that I was taking in my first year was early Greek poetry, and it's like talking about that kind of almost you can judge a culture by its age by how like self-aware it is. So we were just talking about like the internet now in its late stage. It's still trying to figure out what it is, but it is becoming more and more self-aware of what internet culture is. It's like talking about, I don't know, I've got a book here. So going from someone like Simonides, who was 7th century classical Greece, going towards, I don't know...
like Homer?
It's like comparing Homer to... I mean, it's hard to compare Homer because he probably didn't exist, but, you know, like having a poet who's... You can tell in not only the subject matter they write in, but also the way in which they write. You get whoever Homer was or the poets that attributed themselves to this character of Homer to people who then write in a Homeric way. It's like taking internet culture in its infancy and then comparing it now to the kind of the callbacks that the culture can now do, which indicates not only growth but like the amount of time of that growth's occurred.
It's maturity, really, in the same way that I think you could argue that YouTube has reached maturity as a video platform, not just a place to put, because to be fair, when it launched and for years after it launched, it was just a place but for cat videos and people doing silly tricks and like compilations of people getting hit in the groin.
You sounded like such an old man. For place for where they do silly tricks.
Whereas now it's, you get, well, I'm not saying it's better, but now you get people like Rice Gum and Logan Paul and PewDiePie calling people things he really shouldn't be calling people. Like, for better and worse, it has definitely reached a maturity. And I worry about where it's going to be in another 10 years.
I mean, a lot of this YouTube controversy is another indicator of the rate of this cultural expansion, isn't it? Because I think for some of these creators who are, you know, getting publicity for all the wrong reasons, like the things that have happened with PewDiePie, you can almost be like, well, yes, you're in the wrong to a degree, but also for them to be so self-aware and understanding of the voice they actually have and the power they have in that voice. Yeah. You know, if you look at television and film, they've had decades and decades, you know, films effectively had like a, you know, over a century of stars to understand what it's like and for it to ingrain in ourselves in culture. And even now you get film celebrities who every now and then they'll crop up with doing something awful. So when you're looking at these kind of YouTube celebrities, if you like, these effectively kind of B or in some case A-list celebs, they've had, you know, 5, maybe 7 years to understand that same amount of growth.
The comparison between man-made climate change and natural climate change. Like, it might be that the amount of warming, to use that analogy, is the same, but the amount of time it's just taken place in over, as you say, it's instead of a century, it's less than 5 years. It's It's no wonder that there are going to be growing pains associated with that as the like the weight of social responsibility kind of cracks as it expands, and you get a lot of unfortunate aspects to it. I suppose the question is, like, in another 10 years, how much more can it grow? Like, has it is this now what a mature video platform looks like, or is it going to transcend what we even think of as now? And so, if so, are those controversies going to kind of fizzle out because people now get what it means to be a YouTube star or to be on the platform? Or you know, is it only going to get worse, and are these things going to get bigger and bigger in magnitude as YouTube stars get more and more weight? Because whilst PewDiePie, who has 50 million subscribers, you know, he can cause massive storms and get himself dropped from Disney, but it's a storm in a teacup, really. It's a storm in a relatively small thing. It's a question of, is YouTube going to get to a point, or online video is going to get to a point, where it actually spills out into, you know, affecting policy and in government and things like that. It's
yes, a lot of these things that have been discussed on, I don't know if you've seen any of Black Mirror on Netflix.
I haven't yet. No, I've been told to.
That's really interesting. Yeah, it's really, really, you know, it's really surprising how, certainly if you're watching their kind of the first and second series, they almost predicted some events that have happened now, and these kind of instances of just the, you know, the power of the internet and the culture that it goes with. It's scary, you know.
It's a
wow.
This happened again. This happened.
For God's sake.
Now, although interestingly, that episode did really well when we actually got serious for once. So what we've done tactically here is just precede this with a bunch of fluff and us whining about how terrible our lives are and about Patreon and all that kind of stuff. So it's like we've hidden like a stealthy poo. We've hidden a nugget in amongst like the bushes that people have to, if they're really dedicated, they'll find it.
Yeah, we've gone from fluff and meaningless drivel to discussing the finer points of digital anthropology and sociology.
Good God, when you put it like that. We're so wanky.
Speaking
of wanky self-indulgence, should we go to Correspondence Corner?
That sounds like an excellent idea. Let's go.
So as promised earlier, Alex Lathbridge, who you might know as Thermodynamics or as Rapstract, we talked about him in the last podcast, didn't we? He's a YouTuber who mixes science and rap, and you should definitely check him out.
Oh, yeah.
He's very, very cool. So dear Dan and or Simon, he's...
Good he's order. Not, he's not, thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex. Your episode about everybody's favourite frontier pharmacist accompanied me from Bristol to London at 5 a.m. So, good God.
Crikey.
Must have sent you to sleep behind the wheel. Don't listen to this one, whatever you do, when you're driving. Based on this episode alone, I'd say that the following anime guy apply to the pair of you: a turkey vulture and a naked mole rat.
Oh, I don't think Simon looks that much like a mole rat.
Well, I'm pretty sure I am the vulture in this situation.
I mean, if we're going off the order of Dan and Simon, surely I'm the vulture.
However,
absolutely no sense. I am clearly the mole rat, but you know.
The turkey vulture also has the most refined olfactory sense of any animal in the fossil record, I believe. And as we discovered a few weeks ago, I have a rather powerful sense of smell when it comes to identifying people. Like, I seem to be able to identify if somebody's in the house purely based on their smell. It's kind of worrying, but I think in that sense, I'm like a turkey vulture. Anyway, while you two are mulling over which one of you has got a mistake, I have a language challenge for you. I'm British Ghanaian, so I speak more than one language. Oh, that was it. Because when I met him, I apparently won, basically, because the classic thing that he will do with people is they'll say to him, meaning, like, where, what I asked him was, where ancestrally are you from? And apparently what normally people, when they mean that, say is, so where are you from? And he'll be like, oh, London. And they'll be like, yeah, where are your parents from? And they'll be like, oh, well, you know, like they met in Milton Keynes. And it's like, no, but like, you know, like, why are you black? Like, it's basically like, I managed to avoid a lot of racist white people questioning. And just
very,
went straight
very
to the
PC
source.
Of you.
Well, I did think about it a little bit before I opened my mouth, and I was like, yeah, I think that's the right question. But he just laughed and was like, yeah, you win. So he says, however, he's British Ghanaian, however, he's not fluently literate in any Ghanaian language. So what I'm saying is that I've got some words and phrases that I want you to read in Twi, that's spelled T-W-I, which is the best dialect of Akan, Ghana's most widely spoken language.
I think you'll find it's pronounced Twi.
Have you got a pronunciation guide up?
No, it just says later on in the email.
Does it? Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. Well, oh, yeah, thanks, Sherlock. Yes, it does say...
No worries.
After, I'm sort of half sure that I've got the phonetics right. Either way, this will be jokes. And then says twi, brackets, pronunciation, twi. Language challenge. So, do you want to... Actually, no, you tackled it first last time. So, yeah. I'll give this a go first. I'm really sorry, Alex. I'm going to really butcher this. Quasia, mepa... Wait, some of these aren't even English. Oh, they're epsilons. How do you pronounce an epsilon?
No idea.
I don't even know what some of these letters are. This is a new problem we haven't faced. Okay, oh, I'm just gonna have a stab in the dark. Quasia, mepa wo kiu, mepe kisu, oni nkumu bidinti nam aye dagua. Obruni wo te twi? Oh, no, sorry. Obruni wo te twi?
Nice.
That's my best guess. Do you want to have a go?
Okay. Again, apologies, everyone. We've learned to have very high expectations when it comes to
Southern
High
Speed
Language. Oh, God,
I forgot. What music should I put underneath this? what is going to be definitely not in any way offensive that I can put underneath this?
Something. Oh God! Actually, I don't. I'm scared to even suggest something, just in case.
Were you going to suggest like the music from Zulu or something?
Well, I mean, this is an in joke, Simon. But do you not remember the Simba moment in my first year? We'd only known each other for about 4 weeks,
and I thought you were a massive racist.
Oh God! Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Are you suggesting that I put music from The Lion King underneath the African language?
Not at
challenge?
All. That's exactly what I'm not suggesting. I'm not at all suggesting that. Quasia mepa wo kyo me po kisu omni nkombo diniti neanim aye dagwa. Obruni wo te twi.
I think we've both completely failed at that. Apparently, the translation was idiot, and he's put in parentheses, place emphasis on different parts of the word to modify the severity, but he doesn't specify how.
So you could be like, you could say like, quasia or quasia, I guess.
Oh, I see, okay. Idiot, please, I like cheese. Because he has no sorrow, he has an open, cheerful face. Apparently, that's just a nice... Oh, this isn't a poem. It's just various phrases. Okay. It's a lovely turn of phrase to describe somebody, apparently. And then the last sentence, which... Can I just hear that last sentence again, please, Dan?
Obruni wo te twi.
The white man speaks twi? No, he doesn't.
Yes.
I don't think...
He does. He's fluent.
Oh, here we go. P.S. I didn't mention, but Akan is a tonal language, so this is even funnier. We've just... There's no way. There's absolutely no way that that's been anywhere close to reality. We apologise to anybody who speaks Akan or Twi specifically, and we definitely apologise to Alex. However, he does say, I completely agree with Simon. Eating blocks of cheese is the best thing and doesn't need further explanation. Don't be a hater, Dan.
Fuck you, Alex.
So I'm just going to dab on that hater.
I'd be really interested to see. I mean, in the second to last sentence with the backward C.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's one of those like clicks, you know?
Oh, like a plosive kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like every now and then, like you can hit. I think it sounds amazing. It's such a cool.
And I realize this is a very, very broad sentence that I'm going to say. It's something you only hear in African languages, right? In the same, it like saying, oh, you only get that particular feature in European languages. It's like got so many different families in it. But I presumably it only is a certain area that has it. I don't know if Ghana's is.
I remember, I think too, it's present in. Maybe not. I thought it might be present in some like South African. Like, not Afrikaans, but something else. Maybe I'm wrong. I just remember there was a comedian on QI once who came, and he gave like a demonstration of him speaking, and because most of them are tonal languages too. They sound like a song when you hear it spoken, but it's interspersed with these kind of like sounds, and it's just like, oh, it's so cool.
Did you ever watch the sketch? There's a guy who, because it's the way that those are written, I think, is with an exclamation mark.
You're right.
So there was a sketch. Well, it wasn't this. It was just a guy telling a story about how he went to a casino in South Africa, I think it was, and he was being served by a guy, well, served, like, dealt cards by a guy whose name was spelled exclamation mark XOBILE. And he wanted to try, and he was just like, oh, God, I'm just going to try. And he was like, Zobile! Like, he figured that the exclamation mark meant that you just basically shouted it. Because if it was a question mark, he'd be like, Zobile? As his name. And the guy was like, that is not how you pronounce my name. And then, so he was just like, oh, so how do you pronounce it? And he was like, my name is Bile.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. It's like, well, no way you were gonna get that. So,
that's so maybe, cool. It's such a cool language, though. It sounds amazing spoken.
I'd love if you speak a language that has that feature in it. That would be really cool to hear from you. Or equally, if you speak a language that is just weird, we would love to hear from you. So thank you very much for this one, Alex. I hope we haven't been massively racially insensitive. It was Dan's idea to put the Lion King music in there.
We have an email here from Ricky, entitled Wikicast. Hello, guys. Wanted to avoid the order confrontation. Nice way of doing it.
Pussy.
Just listened to episode 11, and I feel like a proper fangirl after you guys read my email. It really made my week, and seeing as I had three exams that I just endured... made my week, seeing as I had three exams I just endured. Sorry, I put all the emphasis. I put the wrong emphasis on the words. as for what anime guy you'd both really be, I really do feel that you'd be a panther, Simon.
Thank you.
After watching the makeup episode, I feel it would suit you well. Dan would definitely be an owl.
What about the makeup episode made me look like a large cat?
I mean, you had a quite dark makeup. Kind of sultry.
But why? There are other animals that are dark. Like,
good point, Simon. Thanks for... thank God you're doing that PhD. Jesus Christ. There are other animals that are dark.
I'm not complaining that I'm a panther. I just feel like, okay, whatever. I'm very happy that somebody agrees with me. And you
I'm happy with being an owl. You're like small, a small wise owl. And kind of resembles one. Oh, okay.
You'd be pigwidgeon.
I'm leaning more towards a snowy owl, but I'll leave that for him to decide. No. I'd rather be a great grey.
No, you'd be pigwidgeon. You'd be a British small owl.
Yeah. Like... And he says, P.S. Congrats on the Apple job, Dan. Oh, thanks, Ricky. It's very exciting.
I definitely, because it wasn't capitalized, I definitely read that wrong. It was like, I thought an Apple job was a variant on a blow job or something. It's like, oh, congrats. Congrats on the sex, Dan. And I was like, oh, you didn't mention this to me. What the hell even is an Apple job? Is it like, have you seen that about grapefruiting?
I've seen that grapefruit video.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's so weird. If you haven't seen this...
I'm not even actually going to leave a link to that in the description. We're just going to... You can find it for yourselves.
Oh, good grief. Sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Well, and on that note, Zachary...
Can you just wipe your webcam because it's covered in sick and I can't quite see what... Cheers.
Zachary has emailed with, I saw you, and a skull emoji. Thanks very much for that one, Dan.
No worries. Thanks, Zachary.
Dear Mises. More Mises. Clark and Moore. What?
Nice.
I don't know.
I think that's better than messes.
Is that the plural of like mesa, as in like a large flat area?
No, it's like, so say if you had two or three, like you saw one herd of moose and another herd of moose, it would be a herd of meese.
No. There is a really interesting reason why that's not the case, because goose pluralizes to geese because it's a European language, whereas moose comes from a Native American language, so it has a different grammatical structure. So there is a reason why
it's the same with why sheep, one sheep, two sheep, because the Welsh are f***ed and they just don't understand how the English language works. I'm kidding. I think it's the most lovely accent in the world. I'm having a joke. It's just a joke.
The classic joke of what do you call a sheep tied to a lamppost in Wales?
I don't know.
A leisure centre.
What do you call a Welshman with a stick up his ass?
I don't know.
A taffy apple.
Oh, okay, that's better. That's good. We apologise to all Welsh people who may have been offended. Right, back to Zachary's email. I'm a long-time regular reader of the podcast, and I'm glad to say that I'm loving it. It frequently makes me burst into hysterics in public places, which is surprisingly entertaining. Hopefully not just for you, but for the people looking at you like, what the f*** is this guy doing? I hope that you enjoy the following questions I have for you. My questions for Simon are... What are your favourite 140,000 characters? Now, I don't know if that's deliberately mishearing Warhammer 40,000, or if you are genuinely asking what are my top 140,000 characters, which could be kanji, fictional, keyboard characters. I don't think I even have 140,000 characters in my brain.
I certainly don't.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to ask me my absolute favorite Warhammer 40k characters, that's a very, very big question.
What about your favorite, your top 26 characters?
God's sake.
Come on.
I think the Interrobang. You weren't expecting that, were you? let me think. A, B, C, D. The Interrobang is a very solid, unconventional choice that more people need to be aware of. My favorite 40k character is probably Gregor Eisenhorn or Gideon Ravener. I don't know.
That's
like Dan Abnett. Yeah. Moving on from that, though, because I don't like to bore you when we record these podcasts, Dan.
And I do.
You really do. What is your all-time favorite snack? What's your favorite snack? Actually, no, this one is for me specifically, apparently, but I'll ask you.
Probably hummus.
Hummus is a good shout, actually.
Hummus is great. There's actually... I normally go to Pret on my lunch break, because it's right up opposite the Apple Store. And a friend of mine who's just started working at the Apple Store used to work at Pret, so he can get a discount. And they're doing a really, really great vegetarian... baguette at the moment, and it's a tapenade tomato rocket. Ooh. And sun-dried tomato. It's really, really good, and some olives. It's really yummy, and it makes me feel good because it's vegetarian. It may actually be vegan.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
well, I'm gonna say something.
No, maybe not, maybe because the bread.
I can't actually see Dan at the moment, but I'm going to say this, anticipating his reaction. I think my favorite snack might well be white bread and Red Leicester and Marmite sandwich.
Sorry. Jesus.
No, that's so nice. It's tangy and it's sweet and it's chewy. Oh, nom, 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 nom. That's why. And then for Dan, if you had to be a cat, which cat would you choose to unfortunately be?
I'd be Crookshanks because she doesn't exist.
And also is just a mean bitch, apparently. Also, you look like you've been hit in the face with a shovel.
Yeah, been chasing parked cars.
I did know a cat once that did genuinely look like it had been hit in the face with a shovel, but he was a very stupid cat, so he might well have been hit in the head with a shovel when he was younger. For both of you, he also asks, what's your favourite country and why?
Also, I just cocked up. Crookshanks is a boy.
What's wrong with that?
Because I said she. I thought Crookshanks was a girl.
Oh, you hand in your Harry Potter card right now.
Yeah, I fucked up. I'm sorry, guys.
What was the question? Shame upon your honour. Dishonour upon your cow.
Favourite country and why? I mean, I'm pretty keen on England. I'm not going to lie.
England's great.
I love it.
I got to say, I think of all
Did you say England's great or England's grey?
Well, both are true, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think of all the countries I've visited, we had a great time in Germany. I really like, I suppose I'm going to cheat and say Bavaria. Both Germany and Austria, I really, really liked. I think they've got their head screwed on right in a lot of ways, in terms of beer serving portions. In fact, I have a Stein next to me right now, full of water. They also have great music. They're very liberal, very tolerant. And also, as Germany has demonstrated with its handling of the migrant crisis, have been very open-hearted and very compassionate. And I think it's
very true. Yeah.
And also, combined with their stance on renewable energy, I think it's a very admirable. So I do. I don't think I'd be ready to move abroad permanently to anywhere just yet. But I do really like Germany.
I'd love to go to Canada.
Oh, I would. Yes. And then a follow-up question. What's your favourite and least favourite computer fonts? Well, okay, on the count of three, say your least favourite computer font. Ready?
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
Comic Sans. Yeah. Easy done.
That's favourite. I don't know if I have a favourite. It depends on the context, really. I use Dents for my YouTube channel for everything, because I really like it. But I don't know if I have an absolute favourite.
I really like Futura.
It's cool. That's a very Apple font, isn't it?
It's not only very Apple, it's also Wes Anderson's font of choice.
Oh, of course, that's why. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, so this is finishes off with best wishes, Zachary. Thank you very much for your email, by the way, Zachary. Although he has several postscripts, including PPS. Cheese is most neatly and most effectively cut straight, not in blocks. Sorry, Simon, I side with Dan here. So there's two sides to this argument. One of which is wrong.
So we've got an email here from Ina. She says, Dear Dan and Simon, again, good ordering there. My name is Ina and I'm from Croatia. If I'm not mistaken, hey! Simon visited my country once.
Twice, actually. I really like Croatia. Similarly to what I just said about Germany. They've got their head screwed on in terms of beer. Very good beer and cheap and very beautiful. So I've been to Zadar, Zagreb and Split and Hvar and a bunch of islands around Zadar. Really love it there. Pixelgar and I had a really, really nice holiday. It's really nice. It's just pretty beautiful. Like, the landscape's amazing. And obviously we went in the summer, so it's obviously going to be really nice, and you're paying people to be nice to you if you're a tourist. But
did they do Game of Thrones filming in Croatia?
A lot. Yeah, that's in Dubrovnik, which I still haven't been to. King's Landing is basically Dubrovnik. Although they did do some stuff in Malta for season one.
Yes,
But I think mostly King's Landing is in Croatia now. But yeah, love the country. Really, really, really nice. I want to go back, actually.
She says, I absolutely love your podcast and Simon's YouTube videos. They make me laugh. But at the same time, I learn something new, which I perhaps wouldn't do on my own. I'm taking advantage of this opportunity to thank you for... That's good. Thank you for an amazing video on Kafka's Metamorphosis. It really helped me understand the work. In the end, I got an A on my oral examination. Brilliant.
Hey!
You're such a dynamic and funny duo. Oh, your podcast always manages to put me in a good mood, so thanks for that. There are so many questions I want to ask you, so I hope I'm not causing you too much trouble. I listed them down below so you have a better overview. One, I'm in my last year of high school, and only 8 months separate me from taking exams, which will determine my future. Stressed because stress became my middle name. I want to study physics, particularly astrophysics, but I'm not sure if I'm smart enough. Unlike math, I'm going to put an S on there, even though it's not there. Unlike maths, where I really do well and I even go to competitions. Sorry, I sound like I'm bragging. In physics, I need to put a little more time and energy into solving the problem. Regardless of that, I truly enjoy reading and doing physics. Do you think I'm making the right choice? Should I study maths, which comes to me more easily?
No, I think you're absolutely making the right choice, because the thing to remember about physics at university is that it is basically maths. It's quite different from physics at school, which is very much based on a qualitative understanding of physical phenomena. Whereas at university, it is, and particularly astrophysics, it's arguably the most maths intense apart from like field theory. So the fact that you really like it and enjoy maths, but you're still interested in the physics, sounds like you're perfect to do a physics degree. So keep going. It's always important to follow what you find most interesting and what you're passionate about, because life's too short to do anything else otherwise. But in your specific case, you sound perfect for physics.
She also says, I'm a big book fan, and therefore I had to ask you at least one book question. If you could leave out any book or story or live in any book world, which would it be and why?
Dan, she says, if you could live out. You just said it, if you could leave out.
Oh, sorry. If you could live out any book story or live in any book world, which would it be and why? I would live in the world of Harry Potter, and I'd be a wizard.
Did you just say here in the world of Harry Potter? Like, you're already in the world?
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know. I'm a bit drunk. I don't...
it's 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a bit drunk.
You started early.
It's a Friday. Come on.
It's true. It's got to get down on Friday. I'll tell you what I wouldn't live out, and that'd be Game of Thrones. Because, good God, Jesus. There's no way. You couldn't be able to pay me enough money to live in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I'd really like to live in the world of His Dark Materials and have a demon.
Yeah, true.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. What would your demon be?
Now we're back to the same question.
I think it would be a panther. Yeah, and mine would be an owl.
No, you'll be a naked mole rat. Imagine if you had a naked mole rat as your demon. You'd never see it. It'd always be underground.
Cool. She said, I hope you can answer at least one of my questions. I'm truly sorry for asking so much. I know you're very busy, which is why I'm deeply grateful for you taking out the time and reading this email. Best regards, Ina. No worries.
Well, I'd just like to say, Ina, thank you for writing to us. We love it. Love the correspondence.
Yeah, and we haven't had, I think this is the first writer from Croatia, so thanks very much.
Next, we have an email from Niels, who Dan tried to pronounce when we just read through the email as knee is, because he thought that the lowercase L was a capital I for some reason.
I think Ni is works better, but okay.
Yeah. Ni is says that he seemed to be a physics student, just like my sweet boy from Germany, and I would... Is that a reference? Oh, maybe to Niels Bohr, but he was Danish. I don't know. And I would love for you to play Frontier Pharmacist. So that is one person. We're going to do it. We'll have to try and find the time to do that. He just wanted to say that your podcast is the highlight of my week. Now go on, Simon. You deserve it. Tell me a bit about your favorite Warhammer expansion. I'm going to resist the urge to go all geeky on this. I will just say, I think that... Because I actually did go into a Games Workshop Pixel Girl. Did I tell you this, Dan?
No.
Pixel Girl dragged me into a Games Workshop when we were in Cambridge. And I say, dragged in quotation marks, and to embarrass me, in quotation marks, because 25 minutes later, she was begging me if we could please leave, because the man was talking to her about his Blood Bowl team. And I was just in a really deep conversation about lore, about what the coming of additional Primarchs to the 40K universe would mean, and also eyeing up all the various kits that I really want to buy.
Fair enough.
I think what they're doing with 40k lore at the moment is really interesting, and there's some amazing models coming out, and I'm definitely going to get back into it. But I think I'm going to first buy the Silver Tower, which I played with a friend of mine in Oxford when I visited, and I really loved it. So that's all. If people want to ask me specific 40k questions, please be my guest, but I am not going to bore Dan talking about it for ages. He has also followed this up, though, with some German words that you may enjoy. Now, Dan, did you study German at school?
No.
Oh, okay. So I did it for a year. It was either a year or 2 years.
I did Dutch, which is probably just going to make my pronunciation worse.
Okay. Now, some of these, I actually, when I say some, I mean two, I recognize. He's provided us with a list of strange German words.
Okay.
Dan,
I feel like if you're the... No. I feel like now that you've bragged that you've done it for a year, you've got to do it.
Okay. So the German word for guinea pig, as of course listeners from Germany will recognize, is Meerschweinchen. I think that's how you pronounce that. Schwein is pig, I remember. So
yeah.
That's it, because Meer is sea. So I think that's like pig from over the sea, maybe?
And isn't Schweinchen, if you add that ending, denotes size, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Because it's like in Dutch, you have a similar thing where you end a phrase with a J-E, and that means like a small version of it.
Oh, okay. I don't think...
So like you have, for instance, in Dutch, you would have jonge as like boy. But if it was like a toddler, you could say like jongetje,
which is like
a little boy.
It's been a long time since I've studied German, but I don't think that's the case. But okay, maybe.
I could also just to clarify, I could be completely wrong there. I just said that and really boldly, and then went, hang on, I might just be chatting out my arse. I'm not sure.
Welcome back to Dan and Simon Really Badly Mangle Languages. It's a weekly podcast. So what would you call a song that's stuck in your head in English, Dan?
Something like an earworm.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the German word for that, as again, German readers will presumably, claim me for my flawless pronunciation of Irvim.
Nice.
I think it's just like stealing it from English, or we stole it from them.
I'm trying to think of one, but Simon, I'm not able to explain it.
Oh, if only there was a German word, like for example, Erklärungsnot.
Nice.
Erklärungsnot, maybe. I'm not sure. Just seeing snot at the end makes me want to pronounce it as snot.
Yeah.
You weren't able to explain it, Dan, because you're at a Weichai.
Thanks, man.
Which means wimp, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, God. How did this podcast become just us being exposed for being... We're going to get better at languages eventually, because by a weekly series of correspondence, people will gradually improve our pronunciation of a different language every week.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ni Is. That's a really great podcast. And a good email, rather.
He's even finished it by saying, I want to wish you both the best and hope you will have a special episode with face cams sometime, because you're eye candy.
Oh, well,
so
knee is for you anything. We have an email here from Jasmine Yas. She says, as a subtitle, hello, peace of God be with you. And the rest of the email is entirely in German. So naturally, I will be reading this one out.
I'll see if I can translate.
I'm so sorry. Hallo, Friede sei mit dir. Ich bin vermisse Jasmine.
I think that's, hello, peace be with you. I'm My name is Jasmine.
Right. Ich schreibe dich für Freundschaft. Ich
fand
dich
nach friendship.
Meinen Gebeten. Es gibt einige wichtige Fragen, die ich gerne mit dir besprechen würde. Antworte mir. I feel like there may have been more to this email. That's it.
That sounds like Jasmine. She's asking for questions. Like, also, like, she has questions for us. I don't know. That sounds like spam to me. Lol.
Does it actually?
I think it might be spam.
Hang on. Okay, you can pick the next one. I'm going to translate this. Oh my God. Okay. It says, hello, peace be with you. I'm missing Jasmine. I write you for friendship. I found you after my prayers. There are some important questions that I would like to discuss with you. Answer me.
That's pretty close. I did a pretty reasonable job with that translation.
It's pretty decent.
A quick email here from Tua Carling, who basically says, or she gets our names wrong at the start. After you discuss what position you play in Quidditch, I just had to quickly write to offer you a request. Try Muggle Quidditch. We could do that, you know. They're apparently
we could. Exeter has a Quidditch team. Yeah.
So we could try and do that. And we could live out you as the snitch. Because that is actually a legit position.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a particularly lovely mustard jumper now, so I'd be set. Right, so that's going to be the emails for this week. We do have a few more that we'd have liked to read out, including our fan fiction for this week. But I'm afraid that, obviously, with our busy schedules, we have to go. And for this current setup, where we haven't had any technical difficulties at all, it's because I'm recording on my laptop and talking to Simon on my phone, and my phone is about to die. So, ever the professional, I also have to be on campus in like 15 minutes. So,
how much battery have you got left on that phone?
8%.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to survive another installment of fanfiction. So we're gonna quit while we're ahead. We are very sorry if you were looking forward to fanfiction this week. It's been hopefully quite a long episode anyway. So calm your tits. It will be back in force next week for sure.
Yes, definitely.
But basically, because we've jerry-rigged this one, sorry, guys.
So, Simon, what have we learned today?
Well, we've learned precious little about the South African company DataTech, because
it's the most
boring company in the world. And it sounds like the cover for a Bond villain or something.
It's going to be really great if we get an email in next week from DataTech wanting to sponsor us.
Oh, God. And Jens Montananana, or whatever, however you pronounce his name, is just like suing us for defamation.
Yeah.
But apart from that, we ranted about Patreon and about how busy we were and about my new idea for hide and seek, but with Google Cardboard. Mm-hmm. And I think that could take off.
You gave us a rundown of your PhD. I had a discussion about how work is going and all the music-y things we're doing. We spoke about Symphonic Evensong, which is coming up on Sunday.
And we got really deep into the deep problems of how mature YouTube is as a community. And like,
sociology and anthropology of internet culture, as you do, just normal lighthearted conversation for a normal lighthearted podcast.
And then we answered emails about which animagus we'd have.
We did. That's all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook, and if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel Spongy and Electric.
Thoughts on Patreon, Hangout Hide and Seek, and other thoughts on the show can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole, and we'll see you next time. Cool.
How much battery are you on now?
6.
Oh my God. Oh wow, we really cut that one down to the wire.